Okay, turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 5. If you brought a Bible, if you didn't, there's a copy of one in the seat back in front of you. You can grab that one. Following along with us, we're going to be in our study called The Real Jesus, walking through the Gospel of Mark. It's the earliest account, the earliest eyewitness account of the life of Jesus. And so we're in Mark chapter 5. We're going to jump right in, okay? It says, they went across the lake. Now let's pause there just for a moment to remind ourselves of last week and where we are in the context of this story. They were in the north end of the Sea of Galilee in Israel, and they were traveling to the east side by boat during this time. And so as they're traveling, we remember what happens, right? There's this huge storm that shows up out of nowhere, kind of like last night. Some of you, it's like the hail's coming down, you're looking out the window, and you're like, oh my goodness, is this because of... We read this text in Mark chapter 4. Lord, are you speaking right now? And as soon as it came, it went. Well, Jesus said to that storm in all of his fury, stop, you just sit down right now. And the storm was silent just like that. The Lord showing his power over the natural world. And his disciples respond by saying, who is this? Who is this? We thought he was a teacher. We thought he's a miracle worker. But this, who is this Jesus? And so as they're on the boat, they head to the other side. And what we're going to see today is that Mark wants us to see that Jesus is not just a miracle worker when it comes to the natural world. He's not just one who has authority over the natural world. He has authority and power over the supernatural world. And what we're going to see here in Mark 5 is the longest and most vivid account in the entire Bible of an exorcism. Now, when I say that word, lots of things come to mind, movies, pictures, right, spinning heads, all that kind of stuff. But we mainly think about that in terms of movies. But when we read about it as history, as part of life in the world, it confronts our modern sensibilities, doesn't it? Am I the only one that confronts our modern sensibilities? It does for us. Especially growing up in the West, in our education, our naturalist education system. Some of us already are kind of saying, wait a second, are we going to talk about, like, demons today? Like, for real? Like, eye roll? Demon? You don't, Pastor Nate, you don't really believe in demons, do you? I mean, you seem like an educated guy up there. Thank you. devils and angels and you don't really believe all this stuff, do you? I do. I do believe it. Now, some of us are kind of intimidated to talk about this world, because after all, we've been taught in our system, in our Western society, that things like demons and spirit worlds, those are superstitious ideas that are just kind of part of Americana, that are just sort of part of a bygone age. We're more advanced for that. We're intimidated to talk about these things. I mean, when's the last time you had a real conversation about demonic or the spiritual world to your coworkers at Chemours or at Citibank, right? Or your friends at school? It's something we're very intimidated to talk about. But what if we thought about it like this? What if the Christian worldview is actually the most open-minded worldview? What if it's a worldview that doesn't narrow itself to just what is seen, but is actually open to the complexities of the unseen? The complexities of a universe that we can't begin to try to define just by looking at a telescope or a microscope. See, the Christian worldview opens yourself to the realities that are beyond our control, the realities that we cannot always see. Do you know, if you think about it, isn't it possible that there are dimensions of reality, even if you haven't personally experienced them? Isn't it narrow to look down on others who are open to the supernatural world? One respected scholar said it like this: the objection to the supernatural comes from a rigid application of our modern worldview's definition of reality. But, it says, which is but only one of a large number of humanly constructed maps of reality. But it is no more absolute a map of reality than any of the other previous maps. And then he says this: a person who rules out even asking questions about divine activity is not neutral. In other words, that worldview is shaped by the cultural narrative that we've been brought up with. And maybe we've just sort of accepted a naturalistic worldview because that's what we've grown up with. And so I want us to challenge our skepticism. Be skeptical of your skepticism today as we approach this text. Because denying the supernatural world doesn't only make you narrow-minded, but dare I say, it might make you naive and unable to handle and have tools in your tool belt to deal with the real problems of good and evil in the world. You realize, if we deny the supernatural world, we also deny the categories of good and evil, because you don't have good and evil unless you have a moral lawgiver. And that's what we've been shaped to think in secular modernism, that the whole world is sort of morally relativistic. It's all conditioned. There's all gray. It's all a matter of opinion. So then how do we explain what's happening in Ukraine right now? How do we explain Vladimir Putin without categories of good and evil? Have you noticed recently, suddenly it's in vogue to kill again? In all kinds of news outlets, it's coming from secular sources, it's coming from all over the place. Suddenly, we're allowed to talk about evil again. The secular mindset that has tried so hard to eliminate ideas of like good and evil, to say that if we just educate people and financially empower them, then the world will be at peace. Suddenly all that crumbles when you see what's going on. Because there is no better word, and indeed no more accurate word, to describe what we all know is true, which is that evil is real. It exists. And it is being perpetrated by some of the most educated people on the planet. And so when we confront the supernatural world today, doubt your doubts and be skeptical of your skepticism, okay? That's all preamble to where we're headed here. Mark chapter 5, verse 1, they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. Now, I want to bring you into the geography of this moment here. This takes place in a location called Kersey. In the 5th century, they built a Byzantine church. Let me show you a picture of it. I've been here. It's a beautiful sight. This is the ruins of a Byzantine church commemorating this moment right here on the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee. And if you look up to the right hand corner, upper right hand corner, you see some mountains, and there's some tombs in those mountains. In fact, these hills are covered with caves, which would have been this time as tombs. And so no doubt these, in one or more of these tombs, this man that we meet here, demon-possessed man, would have roamed very likely in these very hills. Now, let me show you another picture. This is me. What? You guys laughing at my hair? All right, anyway. So this is me up at one of these hills with these tombs, right? Taking a selfie. Yes, selfie. Probably the only selfie I've ever taken in my life. Maybe. All right. And so, but if you look in the back, you see the ruins down in the bottom of the hill, the ruins of the Byzantine church. And then over to the right-hand side, you see some cliffs, some hills that actually spill right into the Sea of Galilee. Now, capture that little moment, because that shows up in the geography of this story in just a bit. So that's where we are in the story. Verse 3, this man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and he broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and he'd cut himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and he fell at his feet in front of him. And he shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" This is a very dramatic account of this poor, tortured soul. Can you imagine what life must have been like for this man? Now, we don't know how he got this way. Did he open himself up to the spiritual world in some way through the occult? Did he seek the power that maybe would come with it? We don't know, but what we do know is that this man was tortured. We know the one behind. We might not know how he got this way, but we know the character of the power, the forces that are controlling this man, because we know who Satan is. Scripture tells us that one of his names is a thief. And that's exactly what he did to this man. He stole everything from this man. As one author says, this man lost his home and the fellowship of his family and friends. He lost his decency as he ran around the tombs naked. He lost his self-control and lived like a wild animal, screaming, cutting himself, frightening his community. He lost his peace and purpose for living. And he would have remained in that plight had Jesus not come through the storm to rescue him. And that's what we see about to happen. Now, notice also in this text that no human could tame this man. No chains could contain him. But this man, as strong as he was, falls at the feet of Jesus. He falls at the feet of Jesus. And it's interesting what the demons say through this man to Jesus. The church father from the 11th century, Theophylact, says this: while the men in the boat were wondering what kind of man this Jesus is, the demons came to give them the answer. He is the Son of the Most High God. That's who he is. It's ironic that the demons proclaim this before the disciples can even comprehend it. And as strong and powerful as this demonic influence appears to be in him, these demons doing before Jesus. They're begging. They're whimpering like scared little puppies before Jesus. They say, in God's name, don't torture me. For Jesus has said to them, come out of this man, you impure spirit. And Jesus asked him, what is your name? And he said, my name is Legion, for we are many. Now, Roman legion consisted of 6,000 soldiers. And so the implication is that there are many demons. We don't know how many hordes of demons, but there are many demons in this man, manipulating him and torturing him like they were. Now, unlike the movies where we see this long, drawn-out battles between priests and, you know, the demon-possessed girl or whatever, that's not what we see here, do we? We simply see Jesus say, get out. That's it. Just a word. Just a word or two. Get out. And whether it's a 60-mile-an-hour windstorm or it's 6,000 demons, it's one word with Jesus. See, sometimes we think that the world, the struggle between good and evil, between God and Satan, is like this, you know, this battle that kind of goes back and forth. You know, these equal and opposite forces. And sometimes Satan wins, and then sometimes God wins. And, you know, it's just a struggle, right? That's not how it works, friends. Scripture tells us that God is sovereign over all things. It is not an evil fight. This is not yin and yang, friends. This is a sovereign God over powerless demonic activity before him. And we know how it all ends in Revelation. It kind of gets in this battle of Armageddon, in this valley of Armageddon. You think this big battle is going to go down, and then Jesus is like, stop it. It's done. And the enemy is sent to the lake of fire. Friends, the battle is won, and it comes from a word from Jesus. We must keep this in mind when we face the demonic activity in our lives. Verse 10, then he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside. And the demons begged Jesus, send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them. And he gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. And the herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep banks into the lake and were drowned. Let's close in prayer. Some of you are like, what is the deal with this story? And if you're an animal lover right now, you're not liking Jesus very much, are you? You're like, seriously? What is up with the pigs? Please tell us something that we can take away from this whole pig thing. And the first thing you might wonder is, wait a second, aren't we dealing with Jewish people? What's the deal with the pigs? Like, I don't know a lot about the Jewish people, but, like, I know pork is a big no-no. Like, No bacon for you. That's how it works for the Jewish people. So what's with the pigs? Well, that's true about the Jewish people, but the people on the east side were not Jewish people. This was a territory that was occupied by the Romans. These were Gentile people on this side. In fact, it talks about the Decapolis, Deca 10, Polis city. The Decapolis were the 10 Roman cities. And when you walk into those cities, it's like walking into Rome. They're built by the Roman soldiers, by the Roman architects in these cities. It's a Gentile area. And so they're all about pork. They're all about pigs. And so we need to understand that. We also need to understand and kind of check ourselves, our modern selves, because when we read this story, we read it in light of Charlotte's Web, don't we? We read it in light of the personification of animals, the moral attributes of animals, these feelings, these warm, kind of cuddly feelings with animals. That didn't exist back then. They saw a pig, they saw food. They saw money. They didn't have these kinds of feelings. So just keep that in mind as you're reading about these poor little pigs, you know, 3 little pigs, 2,000 little pigs, however many pigs. Keep that in mind as you're reading this story. But deeper than that, I think Jesus is trying to get our attention. He's being very intentional about this. This is not an accident. He's behind the scenes, even in something so bizarre as 2,000 demon-possessed pigs running to their death. Jesus is behind that. Certainly Jesus could have done whatever he wanted with these demons, couldn't he? He's Jesus. He can do whatever he wants with these demons. So why the pigs? I think we get a hint of it in the response from this event. Listen carefully, verse 14. Those tending the pigs, they ran off and they reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Isn't that interesting? Say, leave the region? Well, wait a second. Why are they so inhospitable to this miracle worker? Certainly there were sick people in their town, right? I'm sure they had people in their town that needed all kinds of help and healing, maybe even family members in their town. Wouldn't they have realized that this man who healed Legion, the one that no one could subdue, that was harassing the town, he healed them. Certainly he could do the same to my friend. Certainly he can do the same to my son. He's a miracle worker. But instead of drawing near to Jesus, bringing Jesus into their lives, what do? They shove him out. We don't want you here. Why? Well, the answer to that question comes from the pigs. The pigs were money-making. They were a business for these citizens of this town. Because the Romans ate really well. The Romans loved pork. Right? You understand? They love scrapple. I don't know if they love scrapple. I don't know what's around. They love bacon. They were pig people. And you can understand why. I mean, I love it. It's a wonderful creature. I love what the comedian Jim Gaffigan, maybe you remember what he says about it. Jim Gaffigan, a comedian, he says, a pig is an amazing creature. You feed it an apple, which is basically garbage, he says, and it turns it into bacon. He said, it's like the most amazing recycling program ever. I tend to agree. So you understand, the loss of 2,000 pigs hit the pockets of this community. And so here you have on one side this man who's miraculously healed and has freedom. And the other side, you have this financial loss. And here's this community, and they're saying, we'll go with the pigs. We want the pigs more than we want to see lives changed. We'd rather have the money than to see the miracle. Do you see it? See, I believe Jesus, in a way that only he can, was awakening his disciples and awakening us here today to the unseen and the seen methods of the spiritual warfare. We understand the enemy is very tricky, and One of the things that the devil does is try to convince you that he doesn't exist. He's here to steal, kill, and destroy, it says in John 10. But he doesn't always do that in seen ways. Sometimes it's through the subtle, the hidden ways. We tend to read this story and we assume Legion. Certainly it's Legion who was being influenced by the demonic world, right? It was only Legion that needed the supernatural and spiritual freedom from bondage, right? No. An entire town rejects Jesus. An entire town misses out on the freedom that Jesus gives. Why? Because they're in bondage to a spiritual master called money. They miss out. The man Legion knew he needed deliverance, but the community was blinded to their true spiritual bondage. Could it be, friends, that Satan and his demonic hordes are just as engaged in the seen, the unseen world as they are in the seen world? Could it be that Satan is there to try to keep us from true freedom and true life in Jesus in subtle ways too? And in the same way that Jesus used the physical world, the physical storm to draw out our hidden unbelief, I think here he uses a financial storm to bring out our hidden masters of the heart. The Bible tells us that we can open ourselves up to pathways of spiritual influence, of demonic influence, not only through overt ways, not just through cults and the occult and witchcraft and mind-altering drugs, certainly, but also through the hidden masters of the heart. Listen to how it says it in Romans 12. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its evil desires. Paul personifies sin, and he describes sin like a master that reigns and controls us, much like the demonic influences control Legion. And we see this. Let me give you some examples of how this works. We see this in the Bible. Let me give you three examples. We're going to call them demonic masters. The demonic master of selfish ambition, for example. In Matthew 16, Jesus tells his disciples that he's about to suffer and die. And listen to what Peter says in verse 22. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke Jesus. Never, Lord. This shall never happen to you. And Jesus turned to him and said to Peter, get behind me, who? Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. You see what he does there? He takes the selfish ambition of Peter, and he says, actually, the influence behind that is Satan. He calls Peter Satan. That's a really bad day if you're Peter, right? You get called Satan, that's a really, really bad day. Peter's selfish ambition was being influenced by the whispers of the enemy, and he didn't even know it. Friends, we can be disciples of Jesus and yet be influenced by the whispers of the enemy, co-opting our selfish ambitions. The whispers of selfish ambition, the master of selfish ambition might whisper something like this: I must have, you fill in the blank, in order to be happy, successful, or accepted, to justify myself. I must have money. I must have popularity. I must have control. I must have children. I must have, you fill in the blank. It might sound like this: the enemy whispering, nothing is as important as success. You've got to get it however you can. If you need to climb over other people, if you need to work day and night, if you need to work tirelessly, do whatever it takes to be successful. Otherwise, your life will have no meaning. Or it might sound like the whispers to a mom that says, if your kids don't get into the best schools, if they don't get the best job and the best grades, then you will be a failure as a mom. This is how he whispers, the selfish ambition. See, friends, demonic influence can look like a seance in the basement, but can also look like a tiger mom on the weekend quizzing her kids tirelessly over the periodic table. You see what I'm saying? Demonic influence can look obvious, like tarot cards and, you know, and needles in the arm. But it can also look like the guy up at midnight in front of the blue light of his screen just grinding out on the computer. The demonic master of selfish ambition. The demonic master of envy, Scripture talks about. James 4, 1 and 2, it says, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but do not get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight." And then just a couple of verses later, he says, "Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you." Do you hear that? James attaches the sin of envy to spiritual warfare and the influence of the devil. So be careful when you say things like, or think things like, "I deserve." Because it could be laced with the sound, the whisper, the tone of the enemy. "I deserve that job that that guy has. I deserve that promotion. I deserve to be married. I deserve to have those kids. I deserve to have all those vacations. I deserve to have that career. I deserve to have that same popularity, that same happiness. I deserve." Or how about the demonic master of anger? Ephesians 4, 26. "In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry." And what? Give the devil a foothold. Paul ties together our seething, our sitting in anger with the work of the enemy who gets in there like a foothold. It's like giving him the access code and the keys to your house when you stay angry. And can I just confess with you that that was my Saturday, personally? Like, I was sitting in it, and I was had just hardened, just angry on Saturday. And I felt that in me, and I was resisting the whisper of the Spirit, allowing myself to be controlled by my anger, knowing I was going to preach this message, which is the interesting thing. Friends, we must be aware that there are unchecked, unconfessed sins in our lives that if they continue on, friends, it can become like hell on earth. Those demonic influences, when we allow them to reign in our life, will begin to destroy our lives, rot us from the inside out. And it might take a while until it becomes obvious to others, but it eats you from the inside out. I sense the Spirit just calling me just to challenge some of us. You know, there are some men in this congregation right now. There are husbands and fathers in this room that are under the influence of a demonic master that we might call pornography. And you're the man of your house. And you're the leader. And you've allowed this demonic influence into your home. Or you're a student, you're a young person, and maybe one day you want to be married, and you're allowing this demonic influence to control you and set you up for failure. It's your job, men, to protect your house, to protect your wife, to protect your kids in the midst of a war. Do you realize we're in a spiritual war? You're allowing the enemy a pathway into your door, into your home. You've given the keys, your alarm code, your passwords, your bank account to a thief. But there's hope. There's hope for you, whatever that demonic master might be that's influencing you in your life. There's hope. The townspeople, the citizens of this town, were trapped by their own greed. And because of that, they missed out on the true freedom of Jesus. And here's our challenge for each of us today. Jesus might be addressing your bondage to whatever that might be right now. Do not be like the townspeople who said, "Please leave, Jesus. We don't want you here. I don't want you to give you access. Rather, be like the man formerly known as Legion, who ran and fell at his feet before Jesus. You can leave this room today free. You can. Do you know that Jesus said in John said about Jesus in 1 John 3:8, Jesus came to defeat the works of the enemy. No one can free you but Jesus. Oprah can't free you. Podcast can't free you. Yoga can't free you. Only Jesus can free you. Only Jesus has the power to free you. And it takes more than information. The demons know more theology than you do. It takes more than information. It's taking that information and bringing it into your heart and out to your hands. It is allowing Jesus to access your heart, to be able to cast out those demonic strongholds, those masters of the heart, and allowing him to take the reign, full surrender, and saying to him, Lord, you take reign of my heart, and then saying, I will do whatever it is that you tell me to do. Put blockers on my phone, I'll do it. Give my wife the passcode and having her have to log in, having her only log into the computer, I'll do it. If it means breaking off a relationship, I'll do it. If it means giving more of my money sacrificially, I'll do it. What is it that you want me to do? I will do it. That begins to break the power of the strongholds when you let Jesus reign in your heart. Here's what I want you to do. I want to ask the band to come back up. I will give you just a little time of reflection here today. You can use the connection card that's in the seat back in front of you. Or if you're online, you can use one there. And on the back of it, if you want to put your name, you can, or you can just leave it anonymous. It's up to you. But we want to be able to pray for you. We want to be able to know how we can pray for you. Put on the back of it just this, fill in the blank on this sentence. Lord, I need freedom from the master of, and you fill in the blank. I want to give you some time. Just take some time and take whatever posture of your heart you need to take. If you want to just make a space and get down on your knees, do that. Give yourself some time to reflect on that question right now. What do you need freedom from? What do you need freedom from today? Pray to him. Say, Lord, I need freedom from the master of fear. It's crushing my heart right now. I need freedom from the master of envy. I need freedom from the master of resentment and unforgiveness. Freedom from the master of control. What do you need freedom from today? You cry out to him. You tell him what you need. You name it, because as you name it, it begins to take away the power. You tell him what you need freedom from today. Some of us need freedom today from a demonic master of self-loathing and self-hate and words that you tell yourself that are from the whispers of the enemy. Some of you are under the influence of an accuser named Satan who's accusing you, and you're listening to a voice that says, I'm worthless. I'm too ugly. I'm too dumb. I'm too messed up. I failed too many times. No one likes me. No one cares about me. I'm never going to amount to anything. A whisper of the accuser that says, no one would even miss me if I'm gone. Maybe the world would be better off without me. Don't you believe a single word of that. That is the tone and the voice of the accuser. That is not the tone of Jesus. Jesus says, you are beloved. You are worthy. I have made you. I am pleased with you. I take delight in you. I want to be with you forever. And I've proved it to you. Jesus traded places with Legion at the cross. At the cross, he was stripped naked. He was abused. He was bound and he cried out. He was abandoned by the people he loved. He was assigned to the tombs. And at the cross, Jesus absorbed all the evil of sinful men and women so that somehow he could wipe out evil without wiping out you and I. He loves you, and he has power over the controlling masters of your heart. Do you allow access to him? Now, Lord, we want to sing this song out to you. And Lord, through this song, maybe some of us just need to hear it and let it wash over us. Some of us need to shout out loud with arms raised or kneeling down, but may we sing this song in response to who you are and what it is that you've done. For you are the one who is set free. And if we are free, we are free indeed.